Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. In our last segment, we talked about the importance of making good choices and about who and what to lionize when it comes to naming buildings or erecting statues or naming streets. One of the ways to learn about history is through walking tours. Think about how many times you've gone somewhere and signed up to learn more about the Red Light District in Amsterdam or the French Quarter in New Orleans. Well, since a lot of people aren't going anywhere this summer, all summer, we are going to share something you can do outside. Local walking tours, ones that you can do on your own or with your social distancing pod, masks on, of course. And first up is a self-guided tour honoring New York City's network of underground railroad sites. This is part of our Summer in Place series.
End of the spring, and here she comes back. Hi, 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 hey. Damn. Summer days, oh, summer days.
Okay, a summer day walking around the city of New York. There are more than 15 known underground railroad sites in New York City, many of them hiding in plain sight. There are locations in Fidei, Upper Manhattan, downtown Brooklyn, and Queens. And with the two biggest stories in recent memory, social distancing and widespread urge to honor and protect Black lives, a self-guided tour seems to be the right thing. Here to walk us through some stops is Demarius Obi, an actor and tour guide with Inside Out Tours. Demarius, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So you suggest we head down to the financial district, to Fidei. What is that neighborhood's history with the Underground Railroad?
I think there's a broader question about Manhattan itself. All of it is on indigenous land. I think we term downtown Manhattan as the industry of finance, but it's also the industry of enslavement. And there are, as you just stated, multiple spots that cater to fugitives who use the Underground Railroad in that area.
All right, so the first stop on the tour you mentioned is Thomas Downing's Oyster House at 5 Broad Street in Lower Manhattan. Who was Thomas Downing?
Thomas Downing was a free African-American man and business owner. He ended up opening up this huge oyster bar, and that building used to be an old J.P. Morgan bank, but before it was that, it was this oyster house, and he fed, fed everyone on Wall Street, Wall Street brokers. He even fed Victoria, Queen Victoria herself. And downstairs, underneath in their cellar, was an incredible passageway where he hid fugitive enslaved people on their way up to Canada.
So, how did Thomas use the money that he got from white customers to help his community?
Thomas was also, what I like to say is that the Underground Railroad, before the Civil Rights Movement, was the first integrated movement in the United States of America, where it was white and black people working together. A lot of his white customers did not know that the cellars underground where he used to store his oysters was also housing fugitive enslaved people. He worked with a lot of white abolitionists who funneled money to him through uses for the property and the building. And they, a lot of the time, paid for people's passageways as well as their food and resources.
So my question is, what was the white community's attitude towards the Oyster House? I'm trying to think of a nice way to say that.
No, it's okay. Thank you. I'll be more specific. A lot of the people in the financial district respected Thomas Downing, which is weird when you think about the history of slavery. He was operating this business in the 1800s before New York City itself had even emancipated slavery. Mm. And it was operating in plain sight. Back then, oysters, it wasn't looked at as an elite food group. Nowadays, you go to an oyster bar, it's a very fancy experience. Back then, it was an everyday food that you ate. And here comes this man who knew how to shuck oysters. He opens up this oyster bar, and he creates an elite dining experience. So he drew crowds of white elitists and businessmen who wanted to sit and eat in this fancy oyster house that was owned by this free black Negro, was the term they used at the time, not knowing that a lot of the backers who were helping Thomas Downing profit were white abolitionist who also worked on Wall Street as well. So it was a very big underground network operating in plain sight.
Our next stop is in Tribeca at Church Street and Lipsinard Street in Lower Manhattan. It's David Ruggles' boarding house. It's amazing. We had a guest on earlier this week who has a whole page about this in his book. And then when we booked you, I was like, oh my gosh, the universe is coming together. You call this the first black abolitionist bookstore. Why?
In America, it was, I think, as we know through the history of slavery, many black and African American people had been denied the right to an education and to read and write. David Ruggles was born a free African-American man, and he got into the history of education through abolition. To him, this was not a political movement. It was a right for human rights. He opened up that first black abolitionist store in the entirety of the United States to find a way to get word on paper and to find a way to work within that financial district, which operates in Tribeca as well.
And it was the place that Frederick Douglass was taken to be safe when he arrived in New York. He met a black freeman sailor, said, I know where to take you. I have to take you to David Ruggles' house. What else was the connection between Ruggles and Douglass?
Frederick Douglass was also engaged to a woman who was his fiancée, and Ruggles helped Frederick Douglass and his fiance unite. They were married in New York, and then they made their way out of the States to further freedom. So Frederick Douglass is just one of the 600 people who David Ruggles stored in his bookstore. Unfortunately, it had been burned down throughout history, and now it no longer stands as a landmark or a monument. There is a plaque there depicting what it was, but I believe it's a cafe.
My guest is Damaris Obi. She's an actor and tour guide. She's giving us some suggestions for a self-guided Underground Railroad tour. It's part of our Summer in Place series. Let's go over to Brooklyn Heights, which now is known mostly for expensive real estate. Where in Brooklyn can I go to see an Underground Railroad site?
Plymouth Church would be the highlight stop. That's located at 75 Hicks Street in Brooklyn, New York. Plymouth Church was known as the Grand Central Station or depot of the Underground Railroad. The first pastor of that church was a white abolitionist by the name of Henry Ward Beecher. He was the brother to Harriet Beecher Stowe. She is a very famous white abolitionist who wrote the anti-slavery novel Uncle Tom's Cabin. And Henry was really amazing in that not only did he preach the gospel during the day, but he would hold mock slave auctions for the entire congregation. The white patrons would come in and they would bid on enslaved people, not knowing that their money was not going to keep that enslaved or sell them off, but it was actually sponsoring their freedom.
Okay, Damaris, I'm going to ask you to turn yourself towards your cell phone a little bit because you're sounding a little bit muffled, and I want to make sure everybody can hear what you have to say. We are going to move to Upper Manhattan. The next site is at the center at West Park. Am I right? Did I have the...
Yes.
Center at West Park, 165 West 86th Street. What's there?
Central at West Park. I actually stumbled upon that one. I'm still currently gathering information as to how we can get that site available to the public. It's a very, very old church. I was actually showcasing a civil rights show there for 2 weeks. And I went to the basement and I stumbled upon a tunnel. And little did I know that the manager of that building said, yeah, don't worry about that tunnel. This used to be a spot on the Underground Railroad where people would pass through in order to go to Canada. The bottom dwelling area is still there. And the church is currently under restoration. So they're trying to see what they can do about illuminating the history.
That's so exciting. And you suggest your last stop is Mother AME Zion Church at 140 West 137th Street in Harlem. Tell us about this church.
Yes, Mother AME Zion Church actually began down at John Street in the financial district. They later on relocated to Harlem, where at that time there was a lot of black migration from the South, and it's the oldest African-American congregation in New York State. It had really incredible people like Sojourner Truth, who was a black rights activist as well as a woman's rights activist. She would preach from the pulpit about slavery, and it was also used as a holding place for enslaved people to use the Underground Railroad as well. So they had a reprieve in freedom, but also in worship.
So how does the fact this church was founded by black people affect the experience of the formerly enslaved that they had at this site?
Thank you for asking the question. It's a very interesting question. The black congregants who began the foundation of that church, they had been a part of the original settlement down on John Street, and it was very much segregated. So they moved up to Harlem in order to join in the civil rights movement. They're very, 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 very well known for that, being a beacon for the civil rights movement later on in history, as well as the Harlem Renaissance. Even though this was predominantly black, they still had a lot of segregationist practices. So a lot of the black Congregationalists couldn't take communion until after the whites did, and they oftentimes had to sit at the back, even though the whites who attended the church were abolitionists as well. What the black congregants did do for the fugitives who were hidden in their basements is they did give them a place to worship with Bibles that they would have seen had they come from a nation that believed in some form of Christianity. And they were also treated like human beings.
Some of these sites are landmarks, others are not. What is the challenge of getting city governments to landmark and even maintain these sites?
Unfortunately, a lot of that is based upon bias, right? Who decides which buildings in New York City are the most valuable? Right now, we do have the Landmarks Preservation Commission in New York City, and they determine landmark status. It's usually based upon the property itself, and the debate opens up to see if the property is on public or private ground. A lot of the times, black history just hasn't been preserved. In New York, we have a very bad habit of digging up places or building on top of them. So people buy the property not knowing what it is. The history is revealed, and then there's a very big battle with the city. I think there needs to be a focus around cultural change in education so we can protect a lot of these historical buildings.
If you have to pick one site that hasn't have to do with the Underground Railroad and black history in New York, where should people go?
I would say the Slave Market, located on Water and Wall Street.
Yes.
There is a plaque there. De Blasio, Mayor de Blasio has made a plaque. It was up in 2015. That was the second largest slave market in the United States of America.
Demarius Obi has joined us. Thank you so much for providing all this information for a self-guided Underground Railroad walking tour. Thank you, Demarius.
Thank you so much for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.